morning, 7:40 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and sadly, we have a lot of things to talk about with our sheriff, Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons, who is here in the studio with me. Sheriff, welcome back to the show, sir, as always.
Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Let's start with the Amber Alert. We had an Amber Alert yesterday. It looked to me like the father of the child had abducted was the allegation.
Yeah, that was a report we got. The father of the child, who we ended up arresting, Daryl Fulmer Jr., he had a domestic violence injunction on him. He violated that injunction. He pulled into the driveway. He actually pinned the mother's car in the driveway, gets out, and he takes their infant child, or their 7-month-old child, and then drives away. Couple things here. You know, you can't be bumping cars, pinning cars. You can't take a child you don't have custody of, and you also have a domestic violence injunction against you. You can't be doing that. So when there's a fear that the child may be in danger, then we do an Amber Alert, and that's why people got the Amber Alert. Fortunately, a relatively short time later, about an hour or so later, he shows back up at the address. He didn't have the child with him, but we were directed to where the child was. Child safe. He's in jail. Mother and child.
Where did he leave the child?
Huh?
It's his child. Where did he leave the child?
I have an address of where the child was found. I'm assuming it was family members.
Family
member.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The child was safe and he was returned to his mother.
Yeah. Good outcome, but, you know, obviously pretty scary thing, certainly for the mother. So, and she's okay after the car incident?
Well, I mean, she's well physically. You know, you know, the trauma that you would undoubtedly go through whenever your child is snatched.
Plus, you always feel like it's one thing to have a domestic violence injunction against somebody, but you still feel like, I mean, a piece of paper is not all that strong, you know? And arrest after the fact doesn't prevent, I mean, we know horrible, terrible examples, right? And so that's pretty scary stuff.
And that's why we jump on them pretty quickly. We try to get as much information out to the public. And I'm assuming once word got to him that everyone's looking for him, when their phones went off, that he decided this is not a good idea. And I'm glad.
I almost don't even want to talk about this next story because it's just so awful, and so I don't want to spend much time on it, but it is in the news, and if you have any insight that you can share with us about what we think happened, this is that story of the mom and her daughter. I cannot even imagine your officer showing up at this scene with a 10-year-old in a bed and a gunshot to the daughter and a gunshot to the mom, right?
Yeah.
Suicide for the mom.
It's tragically simple. That simple. We get a call of family members were concerned. They went there. And I want to say they actually found them first and called us. And then we get there. Obviously, we see a 10-year-old deceased in the bed with a gunshot wound. And then the mother in the bed, obviously, with a gunshot wound as well. And you know, you just wonder, like a lot of people do, wonder, you know, what led them to this. And, you know, and as tragic as it is, you take your own life, then you also take the life of your child. I mean, why that is, I don't know. There was a note left, a multiple page note. So we're going through all that just to make sure that we cover everything, that all of our bases on this investigation. But
so really, I mean, premeditated, really,
thought out, you know, as much thought as you can give in whatever state of mind that the mother would have been in. But I showed up at the scene, and I mean, you could just tell again, it's just sad. You know, whenever you have something like this that happens,
I don't know how they deal with stuff like this. You know, I've told the story many times. I had a good friend in Phoenix who was a Phoenix PD cop, and, you know, he had to leave child crimes. He just couldn't, he had two kids. He couldn't watch it anymore. Couldn't see it anymore. And the problem is that the good people you need to be in those environments solving these crimes. And in this case, it's not complicated to solve, but the detectives and the cops who see this kind of stuff, it's just an unbelievably hard psychological, right?
It is, and that's why we, you know, we have that informal response when we're all together and we kind of talk about these things. And, you know, you can tell when you go to a scene like that, there's a lot of shaking, you know, slow shaking of heads and like, God, it's just terrible. And then then you got a job to do.
So you
kick into that investigative mode. Again, we were there. We were already meeting with some state attorneys over there on some other cases. And so they went over there with us and we're all just trying to figure out, you know, first we have to make sure that is what indeed took place.
Right, right.
You know, we can't take that for granted just because of what the scene looks like initially.
That's something the ME, you know, Dr. Oleski has told me, is that they, you know, suicides aren't always suicides. and you have to be sure it's not staged or some, you know, it's a murder made to look as a suicide. And so you obviously you have to investigate to make sure that's not the case, right?
That's correct. And then, you know, then that realization that, man, this is, you know, this lady took the life of her child and herself. And that just makes it, that makes it even more difficult.
You had on Sunday, a woman was murdered, this time looks like with a hatchet. Is that right?
Yeah, we got on the scene about the 500 block of Citrus Avenue, which is over off of Michigan Avenue, and we see a female victim with a horrendous head wound, and it obviously is from some sort of a blade instrument or a sharp instrument. We believe to be a hatchet. We do have a suspect in the investigation. We did make contact with that suspect. That suspect is in jail on some unrelated charges.
Okay.
But we are working on getting a warrant prepared. So we're working with the state attorney's office to keep him in jail until we can get that.
He's in custody, not on this, but that's because you're holding him on the other things, but in expectation of charging him with the murder.
Yes. Okay. He's certainly a suspect in the case, but again, we have to make sure that we have enough probable cause, and we have to get enough to where a judge will sign a especially murder, as you can imagine. We have to make sure that we have enough to prosecute. So we made sure that he's staying in jail, and we are working on the murder warrant for him for that that particular crime.
We also had a gunshot murder. This is time with a gun. Two Hondurans, one murdered the roommate, is what it looks like, on Rebel Acres Lane.
Yeah, there was a disturbance, and one it's as simple as that. One shot another, and we're still trying to confirm the victim's identity. Who's from Honduras, and we're not sure of the status there. They don't let us know all the statuses of the immigrants and such. But as we know, we arrested a Dennis Herrera. Basically, a short time later, charged with second-degree murder in the shooting.
Any prior calls to the location?
Not that we're aware of.
Okay.
It's just, again, it's a sad thing, but it's a disturbance that escalated to a shooting.
And I know because they're Hondurans, people will want to know that if there's, are they here legally, here illegally? Do we know at this point any legal status in terms of the two men?
Yeah, again, one of them, the one that we arrested did have a visa and had been here for some time, but we're having trouble with the victim's identity, and you know, because how easy it would be just to give an idea of some sort. So we're trying to find out for sure.
And then the last one, thank goodness, on Saturday there was an attempted murder, stab wounds, and this is involving a brother against a brother. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly what it was. Brothers were fighting each other. One of them takes out a knife and stabs the other brother several times, cutting him. Short time later, we found the cutter, the stabber, and arrested him, charged him with attempted murder. I think what you're seeing here is, again, I think it's 5 things.
Yeah.
And all of them seem to be personal, kind of.
Yeah, none of these are drug-related.
No drive-bys. Normally I'll tell you that almost all murders, almost all shootings are drug-related. I think we're actually doing a pretty good job of getting, stopping cars and pitting cars and getting some real-time crime center up and running.
Yeah.
The technology that we're using now, but this is, these are difficult. How do you stop two brothers from fighting? How do you stop, two friends from fighting and shooting each other? Those are going to be difficult things for us to, and murder suicide. I mean, those are very difficult things to comprehend. And additionally, they're difficult to for us to stop.
And what's the law enforcement preventative strategy for any of these? As you and I've talked about many times, you have profit and drug related crimes are one thing, which you can do a lot to thwart those,
right?
Because it's certain offenders, right? When it's something like this, it's just. It still shows up as a murder in the box score, so to speak, but it's a completely different kind of thing. Domestic stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I would like to just kind of to your point about how you just deal with the murder suicide of a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
We have investigators. We have a handful of investigators, but conceivably we could have had the same investigator go to the Amber Alert. Because we did have all hands on deck, including the real-time crime center. You could have those investigators go into the hatchet killing. You can have them go to the shooting.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's not just one or two here. Yeah, you could conceivably have the same investigator and certainly the same investigative supervisors, our sergeants that are in, lieutenants that are in investigations, that they go to these things. Now, this is a lot for a week.
Yeah.
But Amber Alert, not a homicide, and technically, the murder-suicide
puts you in that frame of mind. You're in that apprehension and concern and anxiety. And
they evaluate the scene. They're there. Mm-hmm. They see it. And part of the investigation is to try to recreate that in your mind, what could have taken place. Mm-hmm. That's what makes a great investigator, so that they can look at all avenues.
Somebody had texted me in the question at 437-1620. Do we have enough grief and psychology counselors for situations like this? Do you feel like that side of the staffing, funding, personnel is available enough?
For internal?
Yeah, for you guys.
Well, and
or
that's
for families.
Why,
and I mean, I know yeah. we have trauma-informed counseling and all that stuff, right?
And the state attorney's or the attorney general's office has some counseling and some victims advocates available. This is why we created our mental health unit, where we have internal and external mm-hmm. counseling. Again, external or the co-responder unit with Lakeview clinicians, but we also have internal where you can go and talk to someone. Again, one of only two programs in the entire state, because we understand how important it can be for people sometimes to talk through these things.
I've kind of been asking everybody the same question because it's imminent now. We're within, 8 days of it taking effect. The new homeless ordinance, anti-camping ordinance that the state passed, mm-hmm. That you cannot camp on public lands. And then if the county, for example, wants to create a homeless campground, they can. They're not obligated to. There's all kinds of restrictions on that. It doesn't look at all. They've taken no action. It doesn't look like they're going to. The city is now passing an anti-camping ordinance that prohibits you from any commercial property camping with or without permission, and from any private residential property unless you have permission. The county has no such comparable ordinance, except like in Santa Rosa, it's a general camping prohibition. Anyway, your thoughts, what are you guys doing to prepare for implementation of the October 1st deadline? And is this Pensacola ordinance going to adversely affect the county? Like, just tell me what you're thinking as you hear all this, because you're going to have to deal with it. Your officers are going to have to deal with it.
Yeah, the state law that passed, it goes into effect on October 1st, but actually enforceable on January the 1st. So it gives some communities some time to work through it.
I guess I had forgotten that part, that it's not enforcing until January.
Right, that's correct.
It's, okay, right. Well, that's it gives breathing space. Okay, all right, go ahead.
And the law itself is directed at the communities, it doesn't direct, the sheriff doesn't mention, or the police department isn't mentioned in any of this law.
Okay.
So basically what the state is saying is county, city, you can't allow people in your public spaces anymore. And if you do want to do that, you have to have a place for them. Well, I'm not speaking for the Board of County Commissioners. That's entirely up to them. So there's no direction given to the sheriff's office to do this. I can tell you we're prepared. If Escambia County says, hey, we would like them removed, we're going to basically adhere to the law, and we're not going to allow them to camp on the sidewalk or do what, camp in a public space, then we will certainly go there and we will certainly remove them. We just need to be told.
But where do you take them?
Do that. Well,
if there's no place, where do you go?
Well, we have to make them move. And if they don't move, then we take them to jail. The thought there is they're going to move. And then there's plenty of shelters. Look, Andrew, we have paid millions and millions of dollars. Surely there's a direction. Surely there's a place. Surely there's a plan. Surely there's something. And I'm not talking directing towards anyone in particular. I just know there's a lot of money. And I wistfully a couple months ago said, you give me $1 million and I'll have a homeless task force and I'll do it. You give me some of that money, I'll have a task force.
I think Chip just volunteered to run the homeless program in Escambia County. So
the plan would be follow the state law.
Yeah.
Here's an idea. Follow the law and let's direct some of that money towards, get what the county wants. And again, the county has to decide, do they want a shelter or not? And if they don't want a shelter, then let us know and we'll move them. Because if they don't call us, then as I understand it, and I'm not a lawyer, but as I understand it, then people or the attorney general can sue them because of this.
For not
enforcing this state law. And I know that there are some Supreme Court decisions that have enforced or reinforced the ability for the communities to do this. So I have not had a conversation with the county about this. We are simply waiting because, again, it doesn't mention the sheriff's office in any way in the entire bill.
All right. Well, action maybe, you know, is not, I don't know. I hope we get this figured out because, you know, January is approaching fast. I thought October was approaching fast, but, you know, certainly something needs to be done so that you guys know what you're doing when you get called on to enforce this stuff. Sheriff Chip Simmons, as always, thank you for the time. Thank your officers. You know, I think all the time about what they deal with and what they go through and what they are tasked with solving in terms of crimes. And I really appreciate the work that your agency does. So thank you for the time this morning.
You bet. Y'all take care.